Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Edwin Lyman, who is a senior scientist at the Global Security Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists and an internationally recognized expert on nuclear proliferation and nuclear terrorism, as well as nuclear power safety and security. The former president of the Nuclear Control Institute, he has testified numerous times before Congress and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Welcome to Background Briefing, Edward Lyman.
Good evening.
And the Nuclear Regulatory Commission today, Tuesday, announced that four of its five members voted to decline further consideration of a plan to expedite transferring spent nuclear fuel from cooling pools to dry casks in U.S. nuclear power plants. And, of course, the lone vote to continue the study was cast by the NRC chair, Allison McFarland. So what do you make of that? That sort of blindness, if you will, to the risks of these pools, given what happened at Fukushima?
Yes, this is an issue that our organization has been working on for quite some time. Because of the federal government's failure to come up with a plan for nuclear waste at reactors, spent fuel is accumulating in swimming pool-type structures, which were not built for the capacity that they now hold. So there's much more fuel in those pools than they were designed to actually store. And the problem is that spent fuel remains very hot for a very long time. It has to be continuously cooled. And if that cooling is interrupted for some period of time, the spent fuel could actually catch fire, burn, melt, and release a lot of radioactivity.
And I take it the fact that there's more of these very, very hot rods in these pools means that they have to circulate more water. And what happens to that water? Is it recycled?
Well, typically it's recycled as under normal operations. But as we saw at Fukushima, if you run into a situation where you don't have access to normal cooling, you have to resort to emergency measures. And in Fukushima, they did everything from trying to drop water from helicopters into the spent fuel pools to use police water cannon and eventually large concrete spraying machines that they filled with water, which finally did the trick. But even to this day, they are pumping water into the reactors and the spent fuel pools at Fukushima, and much of it is becoming contaminated and leaking out again into the groundwater. So you don't want to end up in that kind of a situation.
Well, I don't know whether you saw the piece on Vice, the new show on HBO that's sort of like a 60-minute type of news magazine show. They did a piece on Fukushima, and I must say it was really alarming. It suggested that both TEPCO, the power plant owners in Japan, and the federal Japanese government have been for the longest time engaged in a kind of cover-up, and the full scope of the disaster has really not been either dawned on the Japanese public, or they haven't been informed of its severity.
Well, one of the consequences of the accident was there's a fairly large region that is contaminated with cesium-137, which is a radioactive isotope which persists in the environment for a very long time and is quite hazardous. And if you have a lot of cesium-137 lying around, it creates a situation that's not habitable. So there are about 150,000 people who were evacuated in the months after the accident who still can't return to their homes. And the question is really how much do you have to clean up this area before you can send people back in to live there again? And the answer seems to be no one's willing to clean it up to the standards it was before the accident. So if people want to move back, they're going to have to expect more radioactive exposure for the rest of their lives.
But during the Fukushima accident, I remember thinking it was unit number 4, there was a great deal of alarm that the fuel rods were going to explode. You already had the huge explosions as two or three of them, the reactors melted down. My understanding is that the Union of Concerned Scientists and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, they've done studies on the vulnerability of these swimming pools at U.S. nuclear power plants. And if an accident or terrorist attack happens here in the United States, my understanding is that the resulting explosion and fires of the burning fuel rods could create an would dwarf the economic and social disruption caused by the Fukushima disaster.
Well, that's quite possible because the amount of radioactive material in a typical spent fuel pool could be several times the amount that was in the reactor cores at Fukushima, because we've been piling this stuff up for decades. And so, for instance, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's study on the consequences of a spent fuel pool fire found that in the worst case they looked at, you could have something like 50 times the amount of cesium being released from the single spent fuel pool than was released from the three damaged reactors at Fukushima. And that could lead to an area maybe 10 times what the interdicted area or the exclusion zone around Fukushima is because of that contamination, and affecting 10 times or even 100 times as many people.
So how does this explain then, Edward Lyman, again, a senior scientist in the Global Security Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists and an internationally recognized expert on nuclear proliferation, nuclear terrorism, as well as nuclear power safety and security? The NRC chairwoman, Alison McFarlane, who was the only vote to continue this study as to reduce the amount of fuel rods in these pools and put them in dry casks for storage. And by the way, in order to move these fuel rods from nuclear power plants, they'd have to do that. They'd have to put them in these dry casks. That's what other countries do. But she said in wrote in her commentary, according to this NRC staff study, that reducing the density of spent fuel in a pool at the Peach Bottom nuclear plant in Pennsylvania, for example, could lower the human health consequences of zirconium fire by more than a factor of 10, and the number of individuals who may have to abandon their homes by a factor of 50, and the economic cost by $100 billion. So how come that this doesn't get the attention of all the four commissioners who voted against continuing the study? Why are they so lackadaisical?
Well, what the other commissioners have fallen back on is the old reliance on the claim that an accident so bad that it could cause a severe spent fuel pool fire is so improbable that we don't have to really worry about it. It's the "it can't happen here" attitude that we think greatly contributed to the mindset that caused Fukushima. We think that to really address the lessons of Fukushima, a nuclear regulator has to have a more skeptical approach toward nuclear safety, to question their own assumptions, to question dubious mathematics on the part of their staff, and to err on the side of caution. And we see the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in this vote, as well as many others after Fukushima, as not really heeding that lesson. They're relying on a very narrow set of circumstances. They've convinced themselves that the type of accident is just so improbable, it's not likely to happen. So why should we make the industry spend a lot of money trying to deal with it if it's never going to happen? And the problem is that you simply can't rely on that kind of analysis, and that's what Fukushima has shown us.
But doesn't this also point, Edward Lyman, to what is wrong with nuclear power and the entire premise of the nuclear industry? To this date, since the dawn of the nuclear age, they still don't know what to do with nuclear waste. That's the sort of 900-pound gorilla, isn't it? I mean, there's no national depository. The one in Nevada has been closed, or it won't ever be activated because of local political pressure. As we mentioned, that this fuel rods are normally stored in dry casks, which are much safer. than putting them in a swimming pool next to the power plant, where terrorists could drive by and shoot a hole with an RPG and drain the pool, and then you'd have, you know, something considerably worse than Fukushima.
Well, yes. The accumulation of spent fuel at reactors is, like I said, a direct result of a failure of national policy. And the problem is you can't just bury nuclear waste in any old hole in the ground. You really have to come up with a safety case to show that it can be disposed of safely for the duration in which it will remain hazardous, which is hundreds of thousands of years. So it's not easy to make that kind of a demonstration, and that's the problem the U.S. ran into at Yucca Mountain. However, the consequence of that is if you don't get it underground, then you have to deal with accumulations of spent fuel above ground, and as long as it's going to be above ground, you should come up with a scheme where you're going to minimize the risk that there'll be a lot of radiation exposure to the public from that waste. So you have to find the least bad of a bunch of bad alternatives, and that, we believe, is moving spent fuel from overcrowded pools into dry casks.
So what's going to happen now that this study's been killed? And it's a study. It's not even reached the point of a vote or a recommendation or a mandate.
That's right. The question before the commission was only, should we continue to study the issue? And the majority said, oh, we already know enough. There's no point in wasting any more time looking at it. We'll continue to advocate for change. The NRC isn't the only game in town. There's also Congress, and we know that certain senators especially are very upset about spent fuel. They have to deal with shutdown reactors in their states, including California and the San Onofre reactors. And the problem is it's very hard to get a political constituency today for enhancing nuclear safety, because the industry is very effective and a lobbyist, and they are waging a campaign to try to forestall a decline in their fortunes as a result of a drop in natural gas prices, which is really threatening the viability of nuclear power.
Well, Edward Lyman, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Edward Lyman, who is a senior scientist in the Global Security Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists and an internationally recognized expert on nuclear proliferation and nuclear terrorism, as well as nuclear power safety and security. He's the former president of the Nuclear Control Institute, and he's testified numerous times before Congress and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back once again visiting the deadly intersection of mental health and easy access to automatic firearms.